Today's version of the ELT is a completely different animal. 20 years ago, they were just another struggling Marxist revolutionary group hiding out in the mountains. The end of the Cold War changed everything. The money from Moscow dried up, and the ELT had to find a new way to support itself. So they got into the kidnapping business, which has made them millions.
What's up, Harry? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depth of Entertainment for All Mankind, episode, what is it?
Coverville, 2017.
Yeah, 359, the live Coverthon episode. We did this last year. I think we did it the year before that.
I think so.
I just realized we didn't do our pre-show prep, so good luck, guys.
Yeah, good luck, everybody. We're winging it. There's not too much in Proof of Life that we're going to have to worry about. It'll be fine. Joining me today is Brian, I can't stand Janice Dunaway.
Oh, Janice!
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Shh. You guys hear that?
Yes.
It's the flutie tootie music of Danny Elfman. You know what that means, don't you?
That's right.
We're about to watch one of them military action thrillers that takes place in the jungle. But before we do that, I'm going to need some proof of life. Mm. Maybe Scott could hold up his iPad with today's fake news. Or maybe Randy could show me his hobbit feet in the latest WoW release notes. No, wait. I got it. Ibbit. Find a cure for Alzheimer's while playing a cover of Van Morrison's I'll Be Your Lover Too. That's the stuff. Yeah. That's the stuff. Also, no one talk about this movie in front of Dennis Quaid ever. Infinity.
Oh, I have a question about that. Okay, we'll ask it after. But I have a question about that because there's some confusion in my head about who was broken up with who.
I have questions about that too.
Yeah, I got.
Oh, wait. Did I say Dennis Quaid?
What'd you say? You meant Randy?
I meant Randy Quaid.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think Dennis Quaid is the more appropriate one, but we'll talk about that too.
Yeah. Also, and speaking of Randy's, Randy, seriously, I wish Janice wasn't in this movie, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Ever tell you boys about the time I ran a private kidnapping negotiation and rescue outfit?
No, sir.
True story. Yep. Third World Integrated Trust. TWIT. Okay, I just realized. So anyway, to be successful in the business of saving wealthy white men with long beards, you just have to follow our three rules. Number one, never offer good faith money. You're going to need that money anyway to buy a lot of bullets. Number two, never take the kidnapper's first offer, or their second, or their 15th offer, or their 43rd offer, or their 71st offer. Strap in, boys. It's going to take thousands of offers before you reach an agreement. Number three, just go in with commandos and kill everyone. Apparently, in the third world countries, you can do that and just walk away. Yeehaw! Bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, that thing ended a little rough. I'm going to have to bring that up again in this episode.
I like the ending.
We'll talk about it. Finally with us, the man of the hour. Brian, can someone please do something about Janice Ibbett?
Uptown 1, this is Downtown 1. We have visual on the target. Downtown 1, we have three targets, one with a red bandana next to a shed, possible cargo inside. Downtown 1, this is Uptown Girl. I've been living in my Uptown world. Over. As long as anyone with hot blood can, and now I'm looking for a downtown man. Over. Uptown one, this is Downtown one. That's what I am. Over. Uptown one, going to give it to you.
Oh, my God.
That was great.
That could make it musical.
That was great.
I knew that was going to be the case. I started to write that exact same thing, and I realized I have to leave it to Brian Ibbett.
No, that's too good. Yeah. Too good, man. That was perfectly suited for this weird movie. The movie is Proof of Life, and it is a 2000 film starring Meg Ryan, Russell Crowe, David Morse, and a few other people you may know, directed by Taylor Hackford. And I didn't see it in theaters. Some of you had, I understand, right? A few of you have. before.
Yeah, and by the way, don't get your David Morris confused with your David Morrison. I made that mistake before when I said, oh, the governor's in this.
Yeah.
And I did not correct. Yeah. I just said, believe what he wants to believe.
Yeah. It's totally fine.
Not only have I never seen this movie, I kind of enjoyed it. I thought it was a fine film.
I didn't see it in the theater, but I purchased it.
Wait, you saw this later? You bought it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I purchased this for home entertainment reasons, viewing.
How'd that go for you back then?
I liked it then, and guess what? I like it now.
All right.
It's desperately in need of an editor. And I think I was giving it the benefit of better editing.
I think I'm going to give it the benefit of having a pretty decent back end, but the first part of this is boring as hell. I was bored out of my mind. It was trying to be like The Negotiator, forever rest in peace, Negotiator. I'll probably never watch you again because Kevin Spacey's a creepo.
It's funny, when we started watching this movie and the negotiations in the film start, I'm like, oh yeah, we should watch The
I mean,
did anybody else also feel like it was trying to set up a series?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it felt kind of like Jack Ryan-ish, maybe, something like that.
Sure, sure. Which would have been about a year before 24 happened, I think. I think 24 was 01. It's fine. It's not a... I mean, look, whatever. I can't poo-poo a 17-year-old movie too much because, again, it's 17 years old. This would have been better in other hands, maybe a few years later.
I don't know about that. I think Taylor Hackford did okay for a hack.
Okay, well, then in that case, I want to ask Brian Dunaway, what was the point of the film entertainment-wise? Like, what kind of film is it?
Right. What kind of film is it? It's a work romance film. Weren't you watching?
Oh my gosh. Really? Okay.
Romance film? I love that.
It's a work romance. Work romance film. All right. I watched a different movie, but okay, sure.
Because I felt like it was a thriller that didn't really know that it was a thriller.
Yeah, that's a fair way to put it. I mean, I've got some fundamental problems with it, but it's mostly just Scott problems, so I'll try to explain what I mean. There was this jumps way ahead, but there's a scene, and I know this movie's famous for breaking up Meg Ryan and her husband, Dennis Quaid.
Well, technically, Meg Ryan is famous for breaking up.
Yes.
Ryan and Dennis Quaid.
Because she had an affair with freaking Zippy over here with Russell Crowe, and they ended up together, and I get it. That's all, whatever. Water under the bridge. Nobody's with Russell Crowe now. Or actually, I think, he's separated now even from his wife that he's with now. So the reason I'm bringing all that up is because toward the end of the film, we've been working pretty hard, all the characters pretty hard, at trying to figure out a way to get David Morris out of the worst mountain camp of all time. Mm-hmm. And it's back and forth between him and them and what everyone's trying to do to get him out. He's trying to get himself out. He's working with that really weird looking German guy to get out of there. And that's not really working out very well. And meanwhile, back at the home ranch, you've got Russell Crowe's decided to kind of pro bono this, I guess, because he feels so strongly about it, and he's got Meg Ryan there worried next to him the whole time. At one point, as he's off to go kill these guys now because they've tried everything else, so he's just going to go straight up murder everybody, he basically makes out with her for a good 5 seconds or something.
There's very little setup. I mean, there's, kind of a longing glance that David Caruso catches and makes note of it later, but you see through the fact that David Caruso is paying attention to their closeness when they're looking for candles together when there's a blackout.
Yeah.
But it does feel, it's number one, totally shoehorned in there.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I'll let you say, go ahead.
Okay. And it's completely irrelevant to the plot. Russell Crowe took the whole thing on pro bono because he believes in doing the right thing. And he's, working really hard to get, Peter Bowman back from the camp. And it just feels like he spends so much of the movie being this guy. This guy's like, devoted to his job and making sure that this happens. And I'm doing this for all the right reasons. And then all of a sudden it veers into this place that just doesn't need to veer to, right? He would still go to the mountains and shoot up all the commie Ecuadorians to get the guy back, regardless of maybe having a little crush on Meg Ryan.
Right.
This movie to me, even though I know I played and said it's this, a work romance movie and that. And yes, there's not a whole lot of thriller action which was labeled on this movie. I do think that It is almost a little slice of life, because I think really in a situation, if you were locked up with somebody, two attractive people locked up together, working together towards one common goal for that length of time, emotionally attached like they were, I find that totally believable.
Sure that you're calling it a little slice of life, but anyway, that's fine.
It is a slice of life, because it's truth. It's truth. It's not movie. It's truth.
Right. I agree with you. The film goes to great lengths to give everybody a reason for you to not fully root for them. Right. Like,
right.
Even David Morse's character, which should be the most sympathetic in the film, he's kind of a jerk. Like when he starts losing it out in the bush, you kind of don't have as much.
My shirt and spoon.
Yeah, you stop having as much good feelings about it. This is the same thing, by the way, I'd say about Castaway. Yeah. Anytime you show someone go a little crazy, you lose a part of the audience's esteem for them. So you have to be really careful with that. And this movie wasn't very careful with anything. Like, it didn't carefully tend to Meg Ryan's character's motives and beliefs, and she's just kind of flailing around from one scene to the next. And I just feel like it could have used a better editor and just a little more attention to what the movie's about. I don't get it. Yeah. What is it about?
Yeah.
What do you think the movie's about?
I think it tries to tell you in the last shot. And in the last shot, you have David Caruso's just told Russell Crowe, now we're gonna do great things.
Hold on, you just said David Caruso. Hold on, there's a rule on this episode I meant to talk about pre-show. So if you said David Caruso, all right, I just have to play.
Thank God, I'm not gonna say Caruso ever again.
Okay, you did it.
So Russell Crowe has just succeeded in everything. He's found out that there's a great future. That's the sequelitis part of the problem.
Yeah.
But he's just found out there's a great future, lots of adventure to come, everything's wonderful, he saved the day, and he's kind of in love with somebody who just got in a truck with another person and is going to the airport.
But it's not love.
Yes, it is. It absolutely,
it's infatuation. It's
a film trying to bring back to her.
Right.
In the truck with another person. It's the husband that...
Right. That he's
trying to reach...
Right. Right, so he's feeling pain. That's depicted. You're seeing him. He's got this crazy wry smile on his face as he realizes that he's passed all the difficulties, but he's also created a difficulty for himself. And the film is trying to tell you the whole story in that one shot. And it's just like, hey, film, you could have given me more of what you're trying to give me in the last 10 seconds all throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. You know?
Would you want to see that? Doesn't. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I could see some of that. That scene kind of reminded me, because of that longing regret of going forward to follow duty, very much reminded me of Casablanca.
Mm.
Oh, interesting.
So, I mean,
yeah.
Right. So,
it is
a
Casablanca ending. You're right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of, I don't know, but you're right in the fact that they didn't make us feel like he felt that all along. It really came suddenly and abruptly towards the end. But I was okay with it, maybe because I already knew it was going to happen, and maybe
you
I was like watching for the.
You should put a trope alert on that. That is a classic Casablanca.
You should put
ending.
A trope alert on that.
There you go. There's a trope alert.
You have the two buddies, right? The right. Redheaded one that we're not naming, and Russell Crowe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's people going to an airport.
The red one? You mean David Caruso? You know, I can mention his name. I can say his name.
Yeah.
Just so
that's pretty, well, that's got pretty the straight right up. Yeah. I didn't even realize that. Good job, Brian Dunaway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually like this movie, so I was probably looking for positive things.
Well, let me ask you this. Was there,
reaching for him.
How far through the film, was there anything that I missed that was trying to put these two together? And is the film a better film if, no, let me ask it a different way. Do you think that they wrote that romance between Terry and Alice because they were kind of hoping that audiences would root for the two of them ending up together?
Mm. Or... Oh, so Terry. Okay, so yeah, so that's the idea. The whole thing is to make the audience question who their allegiance is to. I actually liked that play because at the very end, especially when they're rescuing him, mm-hmm. and trying to get back, it flips and he ends up rescuing the rescuer. So you're supposed to
but
feel.
But you kind of knew that was going to happen.
Yeah,
right? And you knew right at the, you know, as soon as Crow gives him that handgun, you know, Oh, let me think. I wonder if I can figure out who Peter Bowman is going to shoot and going to be the only person that Peter Bowman shoots.
My big problem here is that nobody ever discusses or comes up again, but it's hanging in the air like a big fat elephant in the room. Him giving her that big passionate kiss and her reciprocating, by the way.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Drove me like crazy. I couldn't deal with it after that. Because all I can think, I'm looking at David Morse's face. I'm thinking, dude, if you only knew what jackasses you got were trying to get you out of this camp. Like, it feels so cheaty. It feels dirty.
Jackasses. This happens, I feel, probably a lot in military families where, you know, there's a serious loyalty because, you know, Meg Ryan is loyal to her husband. But there's also circumstances and situations where the heart does kind of the opposite of what you would expect. And I liked unpacking that. I
think it's way more interesting. I think it's way more likely that Bowman starts making out with Kessler before Meg Ryan starts making out with Terry. Like, well, I guess we're going to be trapped in this shed for a while, crazy white beardo man. Yeah. Let's go ahead and...
I'm with Brian. It just felt cheaty and grody.
Yeah, the movie could have been another half hour long exploring that prison relationship. Thanks.
Exactly. I would enjoy that.
But the other thing that does, that little shoehorned romance thing, and I'm going to call it shoehorned. I'm not saying it wasn't probably built into the script from the get-go, but...
It actually was in the original story based on Vanity Fair and another novel as well, so it's kind of a combination of the two. The relationship was very subdued, and it didn't really even become a question to the characters until later in the story. And so we don't really see it because it wasn't really there. But then when you realize things are starting to come to an end, all that emotion that you've been feeling, you're exhausted. And some parts of you just like wants it to be over, just kill him or don't kill him. Just, I don't care at this point. I'm so exhausted from all of this. Mm. It's just such a confusing time. And I actually liked how that all played out. That's why I call it a slice of life, because I feel like it feels true to how people actually act and actually do.
I don't know, man.
I've worked with a lot of women in my life in many different corporate environments and, you know, close proximity, working together a lot, and I've never just said,
I'm saying to the extreme. I mean, how many of those have you worked with to the point that you're worried about a spouse who could be dying every day? You wake up thinking,
well, that's why I say it's not a slice of life. That's my whole complaint about the slice of life thing, because slice of life implies everybody's got
this, though. People go through this.
Yeah, but how many people do you know?
Jobs,
yeah.
In none of those jobs was I actually actively trying to reunite the women I was working with their husbands. So that's a good point.
No, but that's my thing. How many, I mean, for real, I'm asking this for real. Like Brian Dunaway, do you know people who were in a situation where somebody was either kidnapped or...
I feel like military and police wives can go through this a lot, because every day you have to question, it's like, oh my God, are they going to die? It's, you know, every time they go into a dangerous situation. Now,
yeah,
this
but
is
do they,
more
but,
prolonged.
But do they, or do we just think they do? Because movies like this make us think they do. That's my whole thing.
Yeah, this is a really dude film, like written by dudes, directed by dude, lots of shots of dudes, and then when you occasionally see Meg Ryan, she doesn't have a bra on.
Not once during the entire movie.
Not once during the entire movie is a woman given anything to do that's, you know, like meaningful and like intelligent. It's just such a dude movie.
You mean you don't think that Janice?
I agree in some ways, and in some ways, I'm like, Meg Ryan's character is super strong. I mean, she does have her flaws, and she makes mistakes, but she's very strong.
It's like saying any damsel in distress is strong as long as they
survive.
She's
not in distress.
Are you kidding?
She pushes this. She goes and she gets Russell Crowe. She makes him come back. She fights for her husband. She's not a damsel just waiting. She is using every means possible to recover her husband based on what she can do.
Yeah.
Did I read that wrong? Did I see it wrong?
I think that's what they wanted us to think. I just don't think they did a very good job of it. There's a lot of sort of, Well, I think I should trust this guy. Come here, Janice. Help me carry money around. Make sure not to dump it all. Oh, Janice, what'd you do?
Oh, Janice.
And then when the guy, suck. The guy, it turns out the guy's lame. They start completely panicking and losing it. Yeah.
Speaking of the money, are you carrying large sums of money in garbage bags? Don't trust that ordinary garbage bag brand.
Love the cheap garbage bag. That was so fun.
The whole thing with the money just freaked me out because I've tried and tried in my life to just move a little money between two countries that are very reciprocal in Canada and the United States. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. You don't get to just summon hundreds of thousands of dollars to a South American country like that. I don't understand.
Well, and the other thing is, all right, so this big scene where they've got this table in the middle of their house and it is covered with money. Now, it's not just it's covered very, very carefully with tall stacks of money. But do they go to the bank and say, yeah, we need $600,000, but we need it in every denomination that you have. Right, like we need
it's
ones.
So weird.
We need pesos. We need francs. We need rubles.
That was a weird scene.
By the way, can we have the biggest tropey paradox of the film?
I can do that. Hold on. Let's see. We gotta make it real good here. So let's go.
Okay, but if you're steering us away from the money thing, I have one more thing.
I'm not steering us away.
Wait, okay, that didn't work very well, but go ahead. Oh, wait, here.
Scrutiny.
There you go. Now give it some
scrutiny.
So
this rebel terrorist organization has apparently been kidnapping people so that it can raise funds to meet its ends. However, we're told very clearly that along the way, they discover that they could move cocaine to make money. Okay, what are they doing? Why are they kidnapping people? Is it right. What's going on? We never find out why in the world the kidnapping happens in the first place. We're told the cocaine is their profit center.
Yeah.
Right. And they kind of talk a little bit about that. It's supposed to be a time of transition for all of this stuff. Like, it's unfortunate that the corporation was going out of business and he just happened to get kidnapped during a time when they canceled the insurance and the terrorists essentially were going from doing one thing to another, and they really didn't even want to deal with this guy anymore. He kind of got lost in the shuffle again.
Almost a situation where, you know, they could have written it into the film that somehow they orchestrated his kidnapping just to kind of get him, quote, out of the way.
Yeah.
But he really was at the wrong place, wrong time. One real quick thing about the money, though, because this stymies the crap
out of it. It's all about the money.
Well, I don't know what it was about this scene. I mean, the garbage bags collapsing and all this, but so the big struggle was that they had to count this money and then they had to give it, you know, package it up and give it to the terrorists. Did the money just appear on that table? Because I'm pretty sure they got that money there by requesting specific amounts that they would have known. And they also spent the time taking it out of whatever receptacle they brought it to that table in. Why not just leave it in that receptacle and turn those over to the terrorists?
I agree.
Why take it out, then freak out over counting it?
Yeah. Who's running this Mickey Mouse show? That guy over there?
And the movie really wasted the replacement negotiators. There's a whole movie right there. The replacement negotiators. But the replacement
like
negotiators.
Two movies jammed together.
We don't know where they come from, and we don't know where they go. Like, they just get run off at the point of a gun, and that's that. And it's kind of sad, because...
Yeah, I was actually expecting it to come out later that they were in league with the terrorists, because that would have made perfect sense, right? That they're that's why they were like, oh yeah, we got to do the good faith money. You have to do the good faith money.
Yeah, they are in some way. They didn't specifically reveal it, but I mean, the fact that we see the guy that comes up and dances with Meg Ryan at the beginning is ended up being, you know, Marco. Hello, Marco. Oh. So, I mean,
wait,
everybody's
was that the
connected
guy?
In this corruption. Yeah, the Melbank. The Mel Blanc looking guy who comes up to Meg Ryan at the beginning is doing all that weird.
Yeah, no. I didn't realize it was the same guy. I thought that was just some dude.
They were setting everything up. I mean, okay. It was all, you know, intertwined and set up. And how deep it goes, I don't know. And I don't really want to know.
That would lend credence to the fact that they knew where David Morse was going to be in his little car. And snatch him and kidnap him then. Yeah. I think it was just a matter of, hey, they're popping out of the hills now. The dude on the motorcycle who ran through the gate getting shot triggered this whole series of events. Right. But if you're saying that Guy Lombardo dancing with Meg Ryan.
That was just coincidental. That was coincidental. Okay. But everybody is corrupt there, apparently.
Yeah. Really? Because I spent the rest of the movie trying to fit all of it together. Like,
no,
what?
Don't do that.
What
no
did that dance, that dance sequence? Look, look, look behind you. Look what's happening behind you. Would you shut up?
Your wife has been kidnapped by Guy Lombardo for a dance.
Oh, my gosh. I thought she was going to get kidnapped right then and there.
Yeah, that whole bit. I wasn't sure what to think about the whole first, I don't know, half of the movie.
Yeah.
Because it just was kind of all over the place, tonally a little bit mixed up. It's not till they got, you know, we're about to rescue him and confront the dude at the worst marching band of all time.
First half.
Yeah. That marching band, by the way, can I just say? I don't think I've ever seen a worse marching band in my life.
Hey, were they moving?
They were moving.
Okay.
It was like a church procession.
The music
right?
was like, horrible. Yeah. Beat was off. Their legs weren't landing right.
I call them a marching band. That's a weird term.
Not band. Well, they had a band. Well, here, you know what I'm going to do? I'm jumping the gun. I'm going to play a clip of this band. And
oh, good.
You guys can get a taste of it here. Let's see. Where is it? I put the worst...
It's funny because when I looked over at Tina when I first heard that and said, oh, my God, this is the music they play when Robin Quivers is about to talk on the Howard Stern show.
Yep. Basically, here it is. Oh, my Lord. It's horrible, dude.
That is really bad.
It's really
Hello,
bad.
Hello, all of you working on the movie. Any of you guys play musical instruments? Great. We need you real quick. Go to wardrobe. We got a bunch of band costumes. You guys, you play the triangle? Awesome. You're in.
You got triangle. Someone else got the recorder. Let's meet here at 8. Let's make this happen. Anyway, I hated that.
Okay. So people who are listening probably think I love this movie because I'm having to fight so hard against you guys because... You guys are trying to give this thing a 2,
yeah.
And I'm trying to give it like a 6.
Sure.
And I'm having to really work to bring the curve up. So, yeah, I mean, this movie is definitely a slow movie. If someone, like you guys asked me in the Slack, Scott was actually like, hey, this looks kind of boring. And he's not wrong.
Mm.
I was like, you're right, it is. And it's not for everybody. And it's definitely, you have to be, you know, kinds of fans of these actors and fans of what's going on to kind of really...
But that's my thing. I'm fans of the actors and I'm fans of thrillers. Supposedly this is supposed to be a thriller. I don't think it's much of one, but I'm fan of all that. I'm fans
Are
of all
Are you a
those
fan
things.
Of this Meg Ryan? Because there's a couple of different Meg Ryans and this Meg Ryan is a flibbery gibbet. You know what I'm saying?
What?
The exact opposite of what
flibbery gibbet. No, it's true. She's not a flibbertigibbet.
Joe versus the volcano, she was a flibbertigibbet.
Hold on a minute. Let me look. Let me grab my 1918 slang dictionary so I can figure out what a flibbertigibbet is.
What you need to do, Scott, is go back to your sound clips from Joe versus the volcano because Meg Ryan talks about being a flibbertigibbet.
We just never saw that, though, did we? Joe versus.
I don't think we saw it.
No, we didn't.
I've seen it many times. But that's one of those.
I wrote jokes about brain clouds, didn't I?
Nope. Brain cloud. That movie is not. Film sacked.
I'm so confused right now. What are we talking about?
Joe versus the volcano. Tom
no,
Hanks,
we have
Meg
absolutely.
Ryan.
I've never seen that movie. I only know. I've heard
really?
The title before.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I would
no,
love
we haven't.
You guys to watch that. That is
oh, we
fantastic.
Need to. Absolutely.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind watching that. But there's the top. Let's say Top Gun. We did sack Top Gun. There's a Meg Ryan where you're like. In fact, that's her breakout thing, right? We're like, oh, she's
was,
just
yeah.
so cute and funny and giggly and whatever. And this one, she's starting to look like somebody who might just have an affair with Russell Crowe if she's feeling a little bored at home. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's definitely...
She was trying to find herself right about now, though, right? Because she's getting ready to do her own
She wasn't
production.
Trying to find Dennis Quaid, apparently.
Right, that's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
She was having a little bit of a... She was having a moment.
She was.
Right?
She was. And then, I mean, okay, I am not here. The minute I even say anything remotely like this, people are going to jump all over me. But oh, I wanted okay. to see
Good
what
thing we're doing it live.
I wanted right, to see right. what she looked like today. Just kind of take a look at her and Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe.
Hold on, I have to jump all over you.
Russell Crowe is very scone-like and puffy now.
Oh, wow.
And that's fine. It's fine. And she is very plastic surgery now. And that is also fine. But here's my problem. Like Jennifer Dirty Dancer lady. What's her name?
Jennifer Grey.
Gray, Jennifer Gray. She succeeded in her particular facial surgery to stay young looking, which again, I don't bemoan anyone for doing this. Do what you want to do. But it's made her look like a human being that is not Meg Ryan. She doesn't look like her anymore. And yeah. I'm saying from a perspective of somebody who was an A-lister in Hollywood, she got $15 million for this movie, for this role. That's big money in 2000 she was an A-lister for sure during that time.
Scott, you got me going to see Russell Crowe, the puff pastry, and he's really not that bad. I'm looking at current pictures. He's gained a little weight. I would think we all do. If you put me next to a picture of me from 15 years ago, you might think I would expanded.
I'm gonna ask you to do a thing that seems rude for you to do, but I want you to Google the following terms. I want you to Google
I'm already concerned.
Russell Crowe fat. And then it's fine. It's like, to me, it's like not Dolph Lundgren.
Val Kilmer. Everybody picks on Val Kilmer. Yeah. Don't do it.
It's like that. Now, again, this isn't body shaming. I'm just saying we get older, we change, we fatten up a little bit. I'm doing it. We all do it. I get it. I totally get it. And he's fine. He so still looks like Russell Crowe, though. If you look at him, it's Russell Crowe.
You can also get these same visual results if you Google the phrase gladiator.
No, stop. Oh, this episode has gone so far off the rails.
It's so good. All I'm saying is he's not in his prime, and that's okay. None of us are. My point is he still looks like Russell Crowe. The work she had done does not look like her. It's not her anymore.
I'm Google imaging searching Meg Ryan here, and I do see a few questionable photos, but they're mostly pictures from the sun. So, I mean, no telling how they took these pictures. I don't see any credible.
I do. I have one right here I'm going to share with you, okay? I'm going to put this in the slot.
Now, I see one that was an art station that about made me choke on my drink.
Yeah, that one is definitely not right. But look at that next one I put in there. That's one from a studio someplace. And again, not a problem.
She looks fine there.
She doesn't look like her there.
Oh, yeah, right.
I would definitely say that as soon as I saw it, like Meg Ryan.
No, it's Meg Ryan's hair. Nothing else is her. I'm telling you, she could be in there. Maybe this was the reason. She could be at the mall at the Gap standing next to me, and I wouldn't know it was Meg Ryan.
Well, and it's funny because that's an interesting photo choice, because if you would have given that to me and not said it was Meg Ryan, because of surgery that she's also had done, I would have said, I think that's Olivia Newton-John.
She's also had, she looks very similar now. Yeah. I could have said, hey, Brian, I could have said, Ibbett, look at Olivia Newton-John here, check this out. And you would have said, oh, Xanadu, I can't believe it. Like, you would have freaked out. But speaking of movies we haven't seen,
I think we're going to see less and less of that. I think a lot of the women who have had the plastic surgeries that are kind of looking like this.
Or the men.
Yeah. True. Yes. Exactly.
Look at what's his name? The wrestler. He looks horrendous.
Every wrestler. Like it's shocking.
That demographic I'm not getting. I don't want to step in and piss off.
I'm just saying, every one of them after a certain age starts getting their facelift. And
Chris Jericho has my phone number, I think, and I'm certainly not going to.
No, he remembers Funny Hat Man.
He does.
Yeah,
yes.
You're still on his list, I'm sure. But my point of that entire thing was, I like Meg Ryan a lot. I really liked a lot of movies she was in. I liked her in this. I think that it's weird that we don't see her anymore.
Well, first of all, I mean, I don't think it's weird because there was a point in time that she really started doing more behind the camera stuff. So I'm not surprised we don't see her more in films.
The reason we don't see her more in films is just the sad garbage of Hollywood, where once women get to a certain age, and it's a much younger age than I think we'd want it to be. Directors don't hire them for roles anymore unless it's to play the kooky aunt or the silly grandmother.
True. Like Russell Crowe will always have an easier job.
Crowe can play the kooky aunt or the silly grandmother for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of bums me out, but you're right that's true. But I always liked her. I thought she was great.
I pull for Meg Ryan.
She's great. She's great.
Right. And I think she's just one of the...
You do that, Brian. You do you, Brian Dunaway.
I think she's one of the many who made a bunch of money and just stopped trying so hard to make more. I like that. That's a lot of actors in Hollywood. And it's great. Like, I would, too. I would get way more picky, and I would do a lot less work once I got ridiculously wealthy.
I agree, but so why do the face stuff then? Why not just be cool with it?
That's because they're unrelated. That's the thing. I'm trying to get you to unrelate what someone does with their body to what you experience.
No. I understand that. I understand that. But what I'm saying is there's a much higher rate of it in Hollywood than you see anywhere else. I understand people that get plastic surgery.
You need to come hang out by my pool.
Well,
man.
I don't want to talk Orange County, but
regardless.
Yeah.
Right. But I have a sister-in-law who's had stuff done. She doesn't do it because she's trying to keep her screen career going. She doesn't have one. So I totally get that that's not everything. I'm not trying to blanket everybody. But I'm trying to think why Meg Ryan would want to. She was beautiful and was aging nicely. She can do what she wants. Like I said, she can do what she wants, like any of us can. For all I care, tomorrow Brian Ibbett could go out and have horns installed in his bald head. That'd be awesome. I would say, all right, man, you be you, like you were saying to Dunaway.
It wouldn't be awesome. You'd be like, what the hell? Dude,
clearly, I would just 3D print them. Come on.
But you'd want to have them implanted like under your skin and, you know, looking all real and everything. And I would be like, all right, hey, whatever. Like, that's a thing. You know, mm-hmm. I just feel like, okay, you know what? Here's who I should be complaining to. It's the doctors who botch this stuff so bad.
Well, not only botch it, to encourage people. I mean, I feel like you probably get into those locations. You probably just go in for a consultation. You're kind of like, well, maybe they can just do a little something here, a little something there. Next thing you know, they got their red marker out and they're redesigning your whole face and showing your computer mock-ups.
If Meg Ryan were turning 40 today and she hadn't had the plastic surgery and she was starting to not get as many roles and that sort of thing, and that was kind of like everything was shifted 20 years, 15 years in the future, I bet she doesn't get the plastic surgery because it's now not as common the thing to do. I mean, look at Cate Blanchett, look at Helen Mirren, Judy Dench is coming to mind. But, I mean, you know, women who look great for their age have not had any work done, or at least don't look like they've had any work done. And I think because of that, you're going to start to see younger actresses follow that path and not say, I'm turning 35. I still need to act some more. I'm going to puff up my cheeks, or I'm going to inflate my lips, or whatever.
As long as we're promoting Scott's Unfriend Me show, we should totally talk about whether or not, do we have a harsher a scale for men than women? Because there's plenty of dudes.
Of course we do.
We have a far harsher scale for women than we do for men.
No, there's no question.
Sure. And I just want to point out, like so many other things in this Western culture, there is a huge industry that is spending $1 billion a minute trying to influence people to come partake of it. Mm. It's not just suddenly people are making up their minds, I'm going to make myself look weird. They are being influenced a ton to do that. And the more money you have, the more it's aimed at you like a gun. And that's the thing. Like Scott is we're all fairly far outside of the line of sight of that industry,
It's easy to pick on it when we're not in it or understand why the big deal is. But
yeah, I mean, you know, it's needing a paycheck, and unfortunately, the sad truth of what they had to do in the 90s to keep earning a paycheck and keep getting film roles and stuff like that.
Yeah, and if you want to get to a place where you can Michael Jackson yourself pretty hardcore if you're not careful. Is all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Just slow it down. You know, look in the mirror. Don't hate what you see so much.
I like how we were like we're starting to get a little bit, a little bit understanding about it. And then Scott, do like a Michael Jackson reference.
You know who should have some plastic surgery?
Who?
Is that Anthony Heald in Proof of Life?
Yeah.
Oh, you think so?
He's a weird looking dude.
Look, you talking about Godfrey John? Are you talking about, is that who you're talking about?
I'm talking about Anthony Heald. What was his character?
He was Godfrey
John. Yes, he was.
No, Godfrey John, the roommate to...
The roommate.
Godfrey John was the roommate. That was Kessler. No, I'm talking about Anthony Heald.
Yeah, the corporate...
tennis, sweaty tennis playing Anthony Heald.
Oh, that guy.
The same hateful character in everything he does.
Yeah.
I just thought he was his character from Boston Public. Like, this was a crossover from that TV show.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. I used to love Boston Public. I thought that show was great. And part of the reason was him. He was like the perfect vice principal and was like made to play that role. My problem with him here is that his accent is horrifyingly bad.
Because he's trying to do that Boston
It's more like Southern.
Yeah, don't come around. Come around here. Oh, yeah, I guess it is more Southern.
Yeah.
Do you have any clip? I guess we'll get to
those. We'll get to those. But he's a guy that you don't see much of anymore. I was looking at his IMDb, and he's got way less stuff. But my biggest memory of him was in Silence of the Lambs. Didn't he have a pretty bad turn in that movie, seems like?
Mm-hmm. He did. Wasn't he like the doctor, psychiatrist? Yeah.
The psychiatrist that Lecter was going to have for dinner.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, oh, goodbye, Clarice.
I'm late for dinner.
Watch out for the guy near the end. He likes to throw things.
I'm having him for dinner. I know the quote's wrong, but yes.
Yeah. He was, he's just an interesting dude, but he doesn't really done much since then. And I don't know if that makes me sad or happy or whatever. He'd be a great Frank Burns in his prime if they were going to redo MASH or something. He would have been a fine Frank Burns. But
great.
That was his job. It's like, hey, can you be Weasley and cranky and smug? And he said, yep, every role, give it to me. I'm ready, which is great. Here's some trivia about the film. During filming at Stowe School in Buckinghamshire, this is when he was talking to his kid at the soccer game, Russell Crowe's character watches his son play rugby, so on and so forth. One of the students asked Russell Crowe for some acting advice. After their conversation, Crowe remembered his serious interest in acting and sent him autographed posters and photos of his film Gladiator and wrote a letter saying, "A thousand-mile journey begins with one step." The extra in question that questioned him and got this cool stuff was none other than Henry Cavill, who went on to pursue an acting career and ultimately landed the role of Superman in Man of Steel and stuff since then.
He also tossed in an aside and said, also, mustaches are cool. And then he walked away.
Now, I would remind you why this is kind of cool. Imagine having that experience as a pretty young kid, teenage age kid, having this experience with Russell Crowe, having a career, getting the job of Superman, and you were told that Russell Crowe is playing... Jor-El was his name. Yeah, Jor-El, your father, is played by Russell Crowe, and you get to hang out with him on set. Like, that is freaking cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Harrison Ford was originally offered the lead role, but turned it down.
Whatever.
I think he'd have been better for the guy trapped or kidnapped than he would have been for dude at home trying to get him back.
Why are you making me hold this newspaper? Get away from me.
I don't want to see Harrison Ford's feet any more than I wanted to see. More than I want to see David Morse's feet.
Yeah, good point.
This is actually one of the few where I can kind of go with it could have been Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh my god.
Because usually when we hear those, it's just insane. But this role wasn't like written for Russell Crowe. This is a really generic role. Ugh.
Hey, we're not going to pay any more than $500,000.
Yeah.
Call me Teal.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so I agree. Russell Crowe's a better actor. I'm just saying.
It becomes a franchise film. I think Steven Seagal, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, any of those, and it looks like it feels more like it's all right. This is setting up the Terry Thorne character as like. A recurring movie series.
Speaking of which, we like to do this on the show once in a while. Do we have a favorite Russell Crowe film, everybody?
Oh.
Yes, I've never seen Beautiful Mind, so I can't count that. I have no idea.
Oh, that's good.
You haven't?
Nope. I've heard nothing. One of those movies that just slipped past me, just never saw it. Didn't mean to. Didn't avoid it, but it's Best Picture, for heaven's sakes. I missed it.
I'm having
for
a scroll
heaven's
through.
Sakes. It's hard not to go with Gladiator. I'm going to go with Gladiator because Gladiator.
That movie's great. How can you not like Gladiator?
Well, I forgot he was in this, but once I say it, I think Scott's already nailed this one.
Mm.
But I'm guessing you're going to say 310 to Yuma because I forgot he was in that.
And that he's was fantastic. Good.
You are correct, sir. That is my favorite of his movies. Well done. I was going to also, a runner-up I'd give to American Gangster. I thought he was great in that.
Right. What do you think about L.A. Confidential? What do you think about that?
Great movie.
I liked L.A. Confidential. Yeah, now we can't watch it.
Yeah, now Kevin Spacey's all up in that. Yeah. Boy, we got a lot back and forth on what things we can watch with actors in them from last week.
Jeez.
I did like him in Les Miserables, actually. Not his singing, but I like that whole
appearance.
Film.
You know, I never saw Master and Commander, and once again, that's one of those things, like Scott says, I always meant to, but I never saw it.
Great movie. That one I've seen like four times, which is crazy because it's like 3.5 hours.
You should have cut one of those and watched A Beautiful Mind.
Master and Commander is a great movie. In fact, I may have to put that and tie it with 310 because that's great.
Wow.
I forgot about it. But
yeah. Now, you saw The Nice Guys in the theater, right? The one with
I did.
Oh, yeah.
Him and
Handsome Boy.
Ryan Gosling,
mm-hmm. And I just want to say, Master and Commander is a great movie if you have not read all of the Patrick O'Brien books obsessively. Mm-hmm. Apparently, if you have read the Patrick O'Brien books obsessively, it's the worst movie ever made.
Well, you blew it.
Wow.
It's Peter Weir, who, in my mind, makes no bad movies. He did the Witness. He made
Truman Show.
Truman Show. Dead Poets Society. The great, you know, I don't think he's made a bad movie as far as I think I can say. And I think that it's an incredible feat. It's got Jarvis in it from the Iron Man movies is in there. And he's, you know what I just realized? Jarvis is married to Jennifer Connelly, and Jennifer Connelly's with Russell Crowe in That Beautiful Mind deal. That's crazy. Anyway.
What? Oh, wait, Paul Bettany?
Yeah, that's right. And that's why it's so cool that the voice of the new Spider-Man suit. No, Spider-Man suit is Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, right.
So she's the she's the Jarvis offshoot.
She's Spider-Man's Jarvis.
Yeah, and it was all made by Tony Stark, and they're a married couple in real life, which is
That's really good. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And today's Black Friday, you can pick up Spider-Man Homecoming in 3D for only $10 on Best Buy.
What a deal.
Dang it.
Before we finish talking about all the cast in some not so savory terms, I would just like to praise Margot Martindale. She's such a small role actress who just shines when given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. She's really good.
Like I don't know what in the world her purpose in this film was, but as soon as I saw her, I was just like, I am going to watch every episode of Justified now.
She's my runner up for Chick in the Bucket, but there's one who's more of a Chick in the Bucket.
She plays a pretty small role in this one, so.
Yeah, Chick in the Bucket for me was Pamela Reed.
Yeah.
The girl that Janice hated at the beginning, and now
she's all up in the business, and we know where she goes, but
She was super into the story. She was a main part of it. I couldn't stand every second she was on the screen because I just thought it was terribly acted and badly done. But she's just...
Oh, I don't know about the acting. I think her acting is great. She's just playing a really annoying character, and she always plays that kind of character.
Probably. I think her lines were stilted. But anyway, whatever. She did her thing, and then poof, we're done with Janice. No more Janice in our lives. Right. And that's
everybody
fine.
Who's not knowing who we're talking about, she's Arnold Schwarzenegger's... Yeah,
she had to get back to Kindergarten Cop.
Kindergarten Cop, exactly. She's the other cop in Kindergarten Cop that isn't Arnold.
Yeah.
Right.
The one where it is a tumor.
What year was that? That seemed like so long ago.
90?
Wow, it was long ago.
10 years before this.
90.
Wow.
Yeah. It's fun little note about them. So Meg Ryan is holding a cigarette a lot and acting like she's a smoker. Numerous scenes. But Pamela Reed and Russell Crowe, who also smoke in the movie, are actually smoking. Meg Ryan was apparently a vicious anti-smoking advocate and refused to draw, so you never see her actually suck in anything. It's just
apparently
smoldering.
Not so vicious she wouldn't hold a cigarette.
Yeah, or inhale. Or get a little secondhand freaking mouth action from Jim Bob there at the end. Mmm, tasty Russell Crowe breath. Mmm.
Is it me or is I? You know, I've always tried to figure out what it is about David Caruso.
I love him.
Play the music.
I love the music. Oh, you want David? Oh, I thought you meant David Morris. You said David Caruso. I apologize. Yeah. Here we go. All right.
What's up with his close? Why is he always like 2 inches from your face? What is that all about?
Because it's his best angle. It's his best angle.
David Caruso.
David Caruso. Well, shoot. You guys keep saying it. I can't play this song. But this is his best face. Everything else, if you notice, I don't know if you guys notice this, but from like the rear when he's running around with a gun or when he's talking in a room and saying these are the guys I trained or whatever, he's kind of this slight looking little twig man. Like does he direct
the other actors to not look at him? Because it kind of feels like when you look at a dog and they won't look at you, it feels like all the rest of the actors are kind of like looking away from him, but he's like 2 inches from their face, just dead staring right in their eyes. It's like inside their face, just
he must be hard to stare at. He'd win a staring contest probably.
Oh yeah, apparently.
Who's that we're talking about? David Caruso.
Yeah, and if you don't know, he was, you know, doing really well on television.
Yeah.
And famously claimed that he was going to leave TV and go make a lot more money as a feature film actor. And he didn't know that we didn't really like him. And, like, we didn't need him to go play other roles. Well, there was no call for it. So he left TV for a little while, just long enough to go find out, he's not going to make a bunch of money as a feature film actor because it's not in the cards for him as an actor, and he had to go back to television.
Yeah.
Well, keep in mind that we've also seen him previously on Film Sack in a little film called Hudson Hawk, where he played the silent, the mute henchman Kit Kat.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Slurp my butt. What? No.
I don't think it was him that said that, but sure, why not? No, I forgot he was in that. I had no idea. Yeah. Was that before his TV thing, though? It would have been, right?
That was before NYPD Blue. Right before. 1991, NYPD Blue was 1993. He left in 1994 and then went and did Kiss of Death, appropriate. Jade. I remember both of those movies, and I remember seeing both of them in theaters because, oh, it's David Caruso.
Kiss of Death is bad, by the way.
That's really bad.
Ooh, really bad.
As was Jade.
Yeah. He didn't do so great. Then he came back and did his sunglasses thing in Miami. That. And then did that for a while, and then that ended, and now what? What's he up to now? What's he do now?
Nothing. Nothing.
Just staring at people on the subway, just staring at them. Just 2 inches away from their face. Yeah.
He would do a great job playing the dad of the redheaded kid who plays the Joker, or plays Jerome on Gotham, because he looks just like him.
Mm.
Like,
I see that. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
He's got some old credits. He was in the First Blood, Rambo First Blood movie.
Yeah.
That's another thing. When Caruso made the decision that he was going to go claim the money, he was already over 40. That's another thing that's kind of unusual.
Well, some can do it. Like, you can see people like... who's that guy? He's in everything now, but he was nobody for the longest time. Richard Jennings. Richard Jennings. Yeah, I think that's it.
Say it again. Maybe it'll sound more right if you say it again.
Jenkins? Richard Jenkins. That's it. Jenkins,
yes.
He's in everything now. He's totally recognizable. He's super interesting. All kinds of critical acclaim. And he's like in his 60s.
6 feet Under.
Yeah. But he's like 60-something before anyone really noticed that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like that when that happens. It's always kind of fun to see somebody find their thing late in life. And like Colonel Sanders, this is a fun fact.
There's no fun facts about Colonel Sanders.
Wait on me. Let's hear a fun fact about Colonel Sanders.
Colonel Sanders was in his 60s before KFC succeeded, before he had his big break and before things happened for him. So the guy was like old as dirt and then finally had success. Everything up to that was like, miss, fail. Suddenly KFC's like this huge thing.
Well, I mean, that's also a timing thing. All of those failures were during the Great Depression and World War II.
Sure.
And so he finally gets successful when things get rebuilt and
there's always factors.
Economy and,
right. There's always factors. I think the problem is that David Caruso was having a pretty good time on TV and was getting lots of accolades. And he was, quite frankly, perfect for NYPD Blue. Like, you couldn't have had better casting. He was great on there. But I also think he was so great on there, it typecasted him a bit.
Right.
So all he was going to get, even if he did transition the movies, were nothing but roles that were more cops or more Looper. Sleazy cops, whatever.
Yep. You read Looper? Do you go to looper.com?
No.
They do a lot of, they do a lot of entertainment news kind of stuff. And so they have a pretty decent article just posted on Skype. The real reason we don't hear from David Caruso before some of their top things to headlines is his post NYPD Blue movie career was not much to write home about. His TV success weren't because he was the star of the show, because other people were. He's really expensive. Huh. He may suffer from typecasting, like Scott said. And he's reportedly difficult to work with, standing so close to fellow actors, they go, back up, Namas kid.
Oh, darn. I was oh my God, that's great. Scott totally nailed it.
Right? That story, you know, where he leaves NYPD Blue, he has to be sort of in the woods for 8 years before he catches on and starts doing CSI Miami.
Yeah.
Eight years is a lifetime in Hollywood that he, you know, tried really hard, I guess, to prove that he was worth more money. It's just the guy isn't. Like, watching him in this movie, I'm like, I don't need him in this movie.
No, and I would have been completely fine. I think most of us would have been just fine with the idea that David Caruso would have had this great TV career. Even before CSI Miami, and then get some other gigs in between. And we're like, oh, he's in the movies. Sweet, dude. And let's see what happens. And if nothing happens, that's okay. That's a million actors do that. Where he overstepped was to come out and go, I'm going to take Hollywood by the nuts. You know, he didn't have to do that, but I admire his, what's the word? I didn't eat enough turkey now. What's the word?
Chutzpah.
Chutzpah. Not chutzpah. It's another word. I admire his I want to say admonition. That's not right. I'm ambition. I admire his ambition.
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 Sure. Hey, there was only one laptop in this movie, and it made all kinds of 2000 era noises. Did you guys hear that thing?
Yeah. I'm glad that out of the floppy drive. Yeah.
Oh, right. I sure am glad that computers never made the sound where every time they display a character on screen, they had to make a blip noise. So,
Oh my God, I know.
It's pretty bad.
Stop using computers.
Who has the gross moment? Who knows?
Oh,
what gross got out the most?
I can tell you there's two things that are super close. One of them is an implied thing, and the other one is something that actually happened. And I'll tell you that, well, I don't want to give it away.
It's got to be feet. Right. I mean, you can't not be grossed out by the feet. The feet are gross.
He's probably grossed out by the person who has to wash David Morse's feet.
Oh, God.
Which is David Morse.
Yeah.
Right? No, there was another guy.
There was another guy who had to wash his feet.
It wasn't that. It wasn't the washing. It was, so it is David Morris. I'll give you that hint. So two things happen with him. One, I think, wins out. I'm curious if you guys know. And I'll even say that one of these is a foot thing, but not the one you think it is.
I got to say, I thought of you, Scott, when he's yelling for his spoon, because I'm just like, I'll bet that spoon is freaking awful.
Oh, man.
I got the off-screen one. I don't know,
but once you've got a spoon, don't you guys have a favorite spoon in your house?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I used to. I don't think I do now. I think I just am whatever's in there is fine.
Actually, I don't anymore.
It's the one I fished through the drawer for specifically.
I used to. My dad used to.
He was nodding her head.
My dad used to have a bowl, and he would eat his shredded wheat in there every day. And if you touched that thing, you were just about murdered by touching
my father's bowl. Shredded wheat bowl. Get off.
Yeah.
Shredded wheat. Boop.
All right, I'll tell you. So
no, wait. Okay. I want to guess the off-screen one.
All right, it's not really off-screen. It's just implied.
Oh. Then never mind.
Oh, okay.
Because he says your toilet is a boot.
No, that's not it.
That's not it?
No.
Oh, come on.
No.
Because he didn't have it. He was missing a shoe, and I was like, oh, he just put that shoe on instead of using it for a toilet. And I'm like, size 9. That's not going to work. Do you see those feet? They're hobbit feet.
They're hobbit feet. No, it's not that. It's definitely not that. No guesses? All right.
What is it?
The one time he got a stick jammed in his foot, that was just really painful looking. But the winner for me was how I could not stop thinking about how David Morris must have smelled when they're taking him out of there.
144 days.
Yeah. And everyone's like holding him and she's all up on him holding his arm. And like, I'm like, guys, don't pretend is not death coming off that dude.
Don't you? I mean, just like terminal velocity, isn't there a point of terminal funk that it just becomes, it can't get any funkier. I mean, by like day seven, it can't be anywhere. I mean, you've pretty much went through all of any type of chemicals to hide that stuff, and you're just you, right?
James Brown had terminal funk.
Terminal funk, baby. Terminal funk.
Dun, 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 dun. You're probably right, but I don't know. I'm not an olfactory expert, so I don't know how this works, but I'm guessing that you maybe what it is eventually you get used to it, but I'm not sure it can't get worse. You just may not notice.
I don't think funk can get exponentially worse. I mean, you're covered in what you're covered in. I mean, it's usually sweat and environment. So, I mean, after that, what more can you get?
But it's, okay, you're not going to get worse, but where you stop is not going to be that good. Like, where you stop not getting worse, it's not like you're going to go the other direction, or it's like, well, all right, he smells as bad as he's going to smell. That's cool. No, you smell as bad as you smell. It's still going to be really, really bad. If you don't get worse, fine, but you're, you know.
We should find out.
But everybody in that environment gets used to it, right?
Yeah,
we all get used to it.
Exactly.
And so, relatively speaking, it reaches a point where it can't get any
worse. There must be some upper limit, upper cap, and some scientist in our listening audience will tell us.
Got to.
Finally reached terminal funk.
Yeah. Your diary, day 21. I think I'm as funky as I'm going to be.
Did you write it in your Bible next to your little map lines? Are you writing your diary now?
The title of the Pharrell Williams autobiography. Right.
That's the one.
The thing that probably grossed me out was my misunderstanding. It's probably my fault.
What?
Because I was thinking when they were trying to get my man to take his photo with today's paper, you know, his funky feet were out there and everything, and they had a spoon. They hit him in the feet with a spoon. I couldn't help but to think that was his spoon.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe that's it. Yeah,
that really does get a lot grosser. Well done, yeah. sir.
Yeah, good job. Where is the spoon? No, there is no spoon, is what they would say. There is no spoon.
Oh, don't hit me with my spoon. Oh, my shirt.
I think it's very funny that I did a where is David Caruso now Google search, and the first image to come up is, I think, the guitarist for REM. I don't think that's him, or maybe it is him.
Buck, Peter Buck?
Yeah, it looks like, you know, the one with the longer hair, kind of red-haired, yellow-haired guy?
Yeah.
Oh, no, maybe that is David Caruso. Never mind.
David...
Never mind. I think maybe he just grew his hair out. All right.
He did. Yeah, he grew long hair about shoulder length. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still a ginger too, so it's kind of
here.
Mike Mills is who you think.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Just like Mike Mills.
Isn't that really weird?
Oh, I don't like him with long hair.
Yeah, I don't like it either. He needs.
Looks like he needs to be on the island of misfit toys.
He needs to take those glasses off and go. That's what he needs to do.
Are those tortoiseshell? What are those?
This is the guy. You look at this guy, and immediately I think he's the guy who's taking forever in front of me at Starbucks because he wants to know if the soy is organic.
But how close is he standing next to the barista? Is he like right up on the barista?
Just close enough to where she can pick up on his terminal funk because he only uses holistic deodorants. And
I'm trying a thing.
Yeah.
This is the way we all smelled before big government tried to get us to use deodorant.
You know what? About 20 years ago, I had a roommate who went through that whole thing where he got nervous about something he heard about deodorants, and he switched over to some kind of all-natural crystal.
Yeah.
And I will never forget him telling anybody who would listen, like he had discovered vegetarianism. Mm. He was using this crystal,
and everybody
knew. There was never a surprise on someone's face. I'm like, they knew he stank. The crystal was not doing anything.
Yeah, basically, you rub a crystal under your armpits, and it's supposed to
nothing. It does nothing.
It's horse poo. Whoever said that worked, and that's not cool. That's lame because we all suffer when someone believes that. That's bad. Exactly. I don't need that.
So is the problem our off-factory nerves? I mean, because, you know, shouldn't it be natural? I mean, what's so funky about funk? I mean,
well, no, listen, as human beings, we have definitely, here's why it's offensive to people. Okay. This is an easy answer. When somebody stinks or there's a pile of poo in the room, you find that offensive as a person, not because, ew, gross. The reason you think, ew, gross in the first place, or your brain translate that as bad smell, is because you have evolved to be a creature that avoids bacteria-ridden things. So if somebody is standing next to you who really stinks, that means they are bacterially dirty, which means A, you could get disease, and B, you don't want disease.
Say so bacterial literal again.
Yeah, bacterial, bacterial.
So I get that. I totally get that. But we also have gone through a cultural shift as a species over the last, 150 years, right? Because all the things that we depend on to keep the stink down have been invented in the last 100 years. And you just know that people were totally fine with body odor.
Yeah. 100 but they were also fine with having 9 kids because 4 of them would die. Like,
is America, I want to answer this too. Is America the most hung up country on offensive smells? Are we so hung up? Because I've met people from other countries, and I'm not saying they're necessarily like, oh my God, you stink so bad, but I'm saying it's not necessarily the top priority.
I think Americans are delusional in believing that other people in other countries don't mind it if everyone stinks. I think that's not true.
I'm just saying, are we more hung up than other countries?
Yes, I would say we are. I mean, you go to other countries and you walk in a crowd, and you notice much more. Well, I don't know about much more BO. I mean, I guess if you go to certain places where that's not a priority in America, then it's you're going to smell it there too.
Yeah, a week in Vegas is enough for me to realize that there's plenty of this to go around. I think it just depends on where you're at.
Right. It's not a negative thing. I'm not applying a negative stereotype among other countries.
You're going the opposite. Like, is it a positive thing?
Are we overhung up on it?
Yeah. I don't think we're hung up on it. I think it's a natural human inclination. I think modern society, like Brandy says, modern society has figured out ways to help curb, cover, and otherwise eliminate a lot of these things. And so culturally, honest, when you don't live up to that, you're dirty.
And I'm ordering some crystals off Amazon. So look.
Oh, good.
Do they sell those there? They probably do.
I don't know.
Let's see. I'm going to look.
So that's, I actually think that there's a movie point here, and that is that the movie is going to have a different effect on you if you're watching it in the modern United States or the modern Western world than maybe somewhere else. Like maybe this movie goes out of its way to impact you with the dirtiness of certain things, mm-hmm, and right. You might not be as impacted if you're elsewhere.
It's interesting that Scott, the reason why this is important to me, because I suffer from psoriasis, which is not only a skin disorder, it's an autoimmune disease. And one of the things that can
exacerbate.
It make it worse. How's that?
That's it.
Gonna make it worse.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
One of the things that can make it worse is constantly washing your every day, like, and that can actually take away oils from our skin that causes a problem. And I'm a clean freak, man. I used to take 2 showers a day all the time. I'm down just to 1 a day, but I'm just saying
There's definitely too much. Right. I mean, there's studies
once
that show that.
Once a day, right?
People that spend too much time putting freaking hand sanitizer on, they're doing themselves a disservice. Like, you need some germs, man. That's totally true. But what you don't need to do is not wear deodorant if you don't shower the next day. Just wear it. Just put it on. By the way, I'm looking at a Crystal Body Deodorant Rock, 5 ounces. I can get it on Amazon for $7.52.
So this week we watched Proof of Funk.
Yeah. Proof of Funk
of Life.
Yeah. Right. Somebody said this. Everyone's saying it works. It's great product and natural too. I love this rock.
All my friends love it. They're never around.
This sounds like sounds like horse poo to me. We need a listener to write in and give us an argument why that's the best thing they've ever tried. I'm very curious.
This is the experiment this week. Crystals instead of deodorant. We'll see what people say.
The only way I'd believe it is if I tried it myself and I realized that I didn't have any funk after a day.
All right. I have 2 alternative titles already.
All right. What do you got? Actually, right. Keep those because I want to hear them.
All right. Okay.
When we get to the end of the thing.
But we need trivia, don't we?
We do. Yeah. Before we are we ready for clips?
Yeah. Let's do trivia before clips. Okay.
Cool. All right. So we're going to do a trivia now. We're going to do a trivia as soon as we're done with Film Sack. So two, because I didn't do one last hour. So this will be 2 this hour. And I have not counted to see how many people have tweeted. I'm going to do that right now. We have, in the last hour, we have...
What's that?
It's David Caruso again.
CSI.
Yeah.
Let's say 12, a number between 1 and 12. Tina, give me a number between 1 and 12.
I love that you've stopped asking Siri. It's the best.
Well, because you Siri shamed me is what you did.
Yeah.
And the thing about doing... having Tina do it is that she's never going to pick 1 or 12. She's always going to pick something right in the middle. Whereas, a true random number. And here's the funniest thing, in my hands, I'm actually holding a large squishy 20 sided die that I could easily just roll on the table here, but whatever.
That's cool.
We are playing for Robin Jensen Oh, cool.
She's a pie maker.
She's a card maker.
Oh, card maker.
I was more excited when you said a pie maker.
All during Tina's treatment, radiation, chemotherapy, all that stuff, we would get regular cards, handmade cards that they'd use like a CNC machine or a laser cutter.
Yeah, we got some of these too. They are rad.
They really are amazing. Yeah, Jim and Robin Jensen.
So good.
Oh, wait, Jim Jensen. Wait a minute.
This is Jim. This is Ida Bloke.
Jim's wife. Yes.
This is the one we did earlier on TMS. I think he got his name again.
It wouldn't be I got Robin Jensen this time, so it wouldn't be fair for me not to do it since we did randomly choose the name. So whatever, they're getting two prize boxes.
Let's do it.
Maybe we'll even put them in the same ginormous box.
Well, you assume that we're going to get any of your questions right. So.
Better shipping rates.
All of you could screw this up.
Yeah.
We can.
Okay. Now keep in mind, you guys can all confer. Don't just throw out an answer, but confer. Your category is Disney.
Disney.
Out of the following list, which of these companies is not owned by Disney? Ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Industrial Light and Magic, Hollywood Records, Disney Mobile, or Gonzo?
That's a lot. Hold on.
Did he sell ILM with Star Wars? I don't think so.
I'll read the list again. ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, Hollywood Records, Disney Mobile, or Gonzo.
Okay, Disney Mobile is not owned by them.
Interesting.
Really?
Yeah, it's a weird...
So that's the answer then,
well,
right?
No, there's more than one, though. How many of them is just which of the following?
One of the following is not owned by Disney.
I don't... Right. See, here's the... Before we give our answer, I don't know about Gonzo, so that could be...
Yeah,
thing.
Gonzo is one of those I don't know either. But I don't... Did they get ILM when Lucas was doing all that?
Well, they own Lucasfilm, so I would assume so.
All right. But that's just the stories, right? Not the... I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know if it's an independent organization or not. I think it came with the deal, but I could be wrong.
You're probably right. It sounds probable. Yeah. But you say Disney Mobile. It sounds like a trick question.
It does. Okay, that's why I'm doing that.
I just want to be clear. Gonzo is the Japanese company that made like Blade and Soul.
Mm. Oh, is it?
That sounds correct.
That sounds right.
Or Soul and Blade. All right.
It's got to be Gonzo. There's no way they're owned by Disney.
Oh boy.
So do I have a final answer? I've heard like 8.
All right.
Right. There's only 4 choices, but we got 8 answers.
If Randy, if you're feeling, I don't know if it's
we're
the same
talking
Gonzo.
About an animation studio from Japan.
But is it the same?
But I think that's possible. You know, Disney has Japanese properties, but you know, I don't know.
We'll defer to Randy on this one. Let's say it's Gonzo.
You are correct. It is Gonzo.
Oh,
well,
thank
done.
The Lord. Good job,
well
Randy.
Done.
Good
yes,
job.
That was you almost steered yourself away from that one. So I'm glad you mentioned it at the beginning, and then you kind of steered towards some of the trick questions.
Well, yeah. It's like ILM of sounds like Disney they might have. Well, sure. But I mean, it sounds like the trick answer.
Right. It totally does. Yeah, exactly. I think that's why Linky McScott threw that in there.
All right.
All right. So prize number one is, and Robin, you're going to have to tell me because I'm not taking it out of the package. It is an 11 waffle air freshener. It's a Stranger Things.
Which you can use as deodorant if you.
Oh, 11.
You could. It's car deodorant, basically, is what it is. You'll have to let us know if it actually does smell like maple syrup and waffles.
Great.
Question number two. In 2002, a Disney film that featured aliens, medical experimentation, and the voice of Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall.
Right. Name it.
What?
Oh, name the movie? Say it again.
Wait a minute. I know this.
What year?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's a 2002 Disney film featured aliens, medical experimentation, and the voice of Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall.
I just saw it. This isn't fair. I'm sorry, guys.
No, it is fair. It's fine. What is it?
When you have a 7-year-old around, you have to. It's got to be Lilo and Stitch.
I've not.
Really? Is it?
It's totally Lilo and Stitch.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's the only Disney.
I should have asked you about Final Answer, but I'm not going to.
Disney movie I've never seen, the animated film, is Lilo and Stitch. Yeah. Just never got around to it.
Stitch is my favorite Disney character. Like,
And Kevin McDonald's voice is very, very easy to spot.
I've got a little Stitch Sum-Sum right here. I've got a little Stitch bobblehead right there. I've got...
And he's the one that does the whatever voice, like the little alien. Exactly. Okay.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Stitch is Yoda here on my desk, a teeny tiny Stitch Yoda.
Nailed it.
Right. I feel like I'm making up for. You might remember last year I had a huge problem with Disney something. Oh, at Nerdtacular, I had a huge problem with a Disney question. Yeah. So I feel like I'm making up for this right now.
So did Garrett. Yeah. Garrett completely screwed us over on his too. Yeah.
Right.
Star Wars.
You're going to get a couple of prints: The Day the Earth Stood Still and War of the Worlds. These things are awesome. They're the old movie posters.
Classic ones? Sweet.
No, they're cardboard, but
still.
Once you put them in a frame, doesn't matter what they are.
Yeah.
Next question, number 3. Name all 7 dwarves.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Blinky.
We're always going
to... Am I allowed to scribble down some notes?
Yes.
I think that would be fair.
Inky, okay, Blinky, right. Clyde. Just... Wait, those are ghosts. Pac-Man ghosts. Pac-Man ghosts.
They're mostly body functions, right? They're mostly body...
Hold on.
Functions like sleepy. Go ahead.
Please, right. I want you to play off of Dunaway's. Please.
I have 7 ticks here. Okay, so sleepy. We know sleepy.
Sleepy.
Yes.
Yeah. We know happy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
My favorite body function is happy.
We know dopey and sneezy. You're both
dopey
dwarves.
And sneezy.
Sneezy. Right. Correct.
Okay. Grumpy. Three more to go. Grumpy.
Grumpy. And there's Doc. Come
Doc.
On.
Doc.
And
we this is 7th, right?
Yeah.
You need grumpy, the 7th.
Happy, sleepy, dopey. Bashful. We have
bashful.
Correct. There you go. That is all 7. Blu-ray copy of the film Quarries, subtitled They Just Keep Coming.
Wow.
Okay.
Isn't there an eighth dwarf named Shithead or something? What's the
Yeah.
All right.
Yes. As a group of women embark on a hiking expedition, they become brazenly stalked by a pack of predators, leading to a physical and emotional cat and mouse chase with an outcome neither expected. Quarries is the all-new award-winning independent film from the producer of Final Destination.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah. It's the only thing the guy who made Final Destination has any notoriety for. All right.
Those movies freaked me out. I miss those movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could bring those back.
All right. Number four. What is one of Olaf the Snowman's favorite things? I don't know why you're guessing one of them, but because I only have one answer.
This is going to be
Olaf's favorite things.
What is Olaf the Snowman's favorite thing? We're going to say it's his favorite thing.
Thing. Okay. I mean, it's sunlight, is it?
Is it? So, okay. So we just saw Olaf yesterday in, in Macy's Parade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then there's the answer. What do you have?
So we what was talked about, we talked about Olaf a lot and I don't know. The funny thing about him is that he likes warmth, but he doesn't know what warmth is.
Yeah. And it melts him and he doesn't realize what's happening.
Yeah. Like what's that song?
Was he holding anything? It doesn't, he has a point. Did he have anything in his hand? Like his carrot or anything, or?
It's called In Summer is the song. That's what it's called. In Summer.
Yeah, he dances around. He's melting.
So, yeah. So, let's say he likes summer or summer.
He likes
summertime.
Let's see. He finally see a summer breeze blow away a winter storm. Gosh, what? He names so many things that he likes, though. Like
just one thing. We just need one. We just need one.
Pick apparently the one that Linky McScott's hoped that you would choose.
Right.
He likes hugs and warmth.
Oh! I think you're right. Doesn't he like hugs? Everybody likes hugs. That's a safe one, right?
Is that a final answer?
Yeah, I'll say hugs.
Yes.
That is exactly correct.
He likes
hugs. Look at that!
Well done. We are adding the Star Wars FAQ, Everything Left to Know About the Trilogy That Changed the Movies. This is actually a very surprisingly thick book with a ton of information, not a lot of photos.
I liked it is surprisingly thick.
It is surprisingly thick.
Holy crap.
You think that, like, you know, a frequently asked questions, no way are all these questions frequently asked.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
or is it big print in pictures?
That's how
tiny,
I like everything.
Very tiny print. Look at that. Like super tiny print. And 391 pages of that tiny print.
Wow.
Wait, you said look at that. Oh, you don't
that's
have
like,
camera.
That's like,
oh, I'm sorry. I held that up and then I stopped.
That's no, like I'm, reading.
No,
it.
I just mean we don't have your camera, so we can't.
Oh, see. Well, the stream does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have the stream on and I just realized the answers to these questions have been flowing in the chat.
Mm. Oh, really?
Well, that's what they do in there. Yeah.
Yeah, those.
Those rascally rabbits.
Chatters. All right, your final question. And again, you guys, Disney fans, you should know this. According to the Mad Hatter and the Tea Party guests, how many unbirthdays do you have every year?
364. I mean,
it's got to be 364, right? That's a simple answer. It's got to be 364,
that's exactly
right?
What it is, 364. Although, you know, somebody could argue that in leap year you actually have 365 unbirthdays, but 364 is the answer we're looking for.
And 1/4.
This is awesome. Again, an awesome prize package. This is a Mega Constructs Star Trek The Next Generation Kubros featuring Jean-Luc Picard. This is like, you can tell by the size of this box, this is no little Mini-Mates thing. This is a decent size Lego style.
Everything Ibbot has today is large.
You said it.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is going to Robin Jensen. Congratulations.
Well done.
Nice.
All right, let's get to movie clips. Let's
all right,
get to clips.
I got those.
Movie clips.
Here are some. How about this one? It's the Southern Charm one from Margot Martindale. Don't drink any whiskey she brings you, because I've seen Justified. All right, here it is. Check it out.
Hey, y'all. Sorry we're late.
Where is everybody?
Nobody called you? Are you shitting me?
Thelner and Buddy and their whole gang had to go to Houston this morning. Some kind of powwow. Peggy said if he was going, she was going. And I guess all the girls jumped on that.
There you go. We didn't get enough of her, but I like her.
It was in the glass the whole time.
It was in the glass, Raylan. Here's one that just struck a little too real for me. So you'll see why I captured it. Here you go.
About 8 years of shit postings, 8 years of working for assholes, 8 years of working for somebody else's bad ideas.
Oh, 8 years. Well,
that sounds like Reddit. Yeah. Hold on. Play it again. He's describing Reddit.
Yeah. 8 years of
the
shit posting.
The history of Reddit.
He's describing
about 8 years
Miami,
of
actually.
Shit posting.
To me, it sounds like a certain presidency.
About 8 years of shit posting.
8 years of shit posting. All right. Here's a fake bad accent. So there's that one I was telling you about. Whoops, there it is.
Don't lose track of where you stand in the food chain round here.
Round here.
Oh, yeah, that's totally, yes. Southern lawyer.
Yeah, it's really
I'm Anthony
bad.
Hill, Southern lawyer.
I may just be a country chicken. He's like that guy in Futurama. I love that guy, though.
Yeah.
Here is Margot Martindale, the last thing you hear from her. Okay, this is the final line from the best actress in the movie.
It's about Peter.
It's about Peter, and that's it. That's all you get. you could say
how
things
did she
like
know so quickly. By the way, she knew awfully quickly about what had happened to Peter.
Yeah, she knew right away. What was her info? Where did she have a contact?
I'd wonder about her.
All right. If she ever if you read the Peter Pumpkin Eater thing and you say what was that about, she'd say
it's about Peter.
Okay, and if you said
tell me about Family Guy.
What's it's all about Peter?
Yeah. What do I get if I watch Family Guy?
It's about Peter.
Okay, great. Oh. What if I have too much salt?
It's about Peter.
Oh, not salt, Peter. Got
what's
it.
This? What's this all male porno thing about?
It's about Peter.
Wow, you made it dirty. You just had to make it.
That's
dirty.
All right. We had to get there somehow. All right. Conversation rate. What? I don't know what this is here.
1.5 billion pesos.
Jesus.
It's only $50,000.
Okay.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so?
Yeah. Why didn't you just start with the dollars then? Because all you did was shock everybody by saying billion or million or whatever he said. The sister is terrible. Here she is.
Peter is alive now.
Peter is my little brother. Trying to be smart about this. I've never done this before.
She's bad in this, Ibbit. She's bad in it.
Oh, she is. That line. I've never done this before.
I've never done this before.
Yeah, she's bad. She's all bad. Right. Here's Fumblefingers Janice. It's mostly sound effects, but here she is.
Oh, Janice! Oh, Christ! Yes, this is ridiculous!
Janice!
Foley artist clearly was dropping rubber banded pieces of paper for like 10 minutes after rubber banded pieces of money would have fallen down.
The only
bag.
Thing that would have made it better is if it was in black and white and it was that part of the infomercial.
How many times has this happened to you?
Totally, dude. All right, here's this is interesting. This is somebody talking to Brian Ibbett on prom night. Probably the dad at the door. Okay, so is you coming over again to see this girl you took out? Sure. This is what the dad said.
You want to talk to these ladies? You come back later.
There you go.
Wow,
that was you.
Man, her dad was a jerk.
He really was. Then he said,
oh. "There you go.
There you go."
Oh well, okay.
There you go.
I kind of like that guy.
I kind of liked him too.
Now you got it. Now put your other foot in front of this foot. There you go.
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 How about this one? Shirt and spoon. It was kind of hard to make this out, but it's good.
I want my shirt. I want my spoon.
The end was cutting him off.
He doesn't sound like he's standing outside next to a river in the mountains.
No. He sounds like he's standing inside by a microphone and a studio.
Inside a coffee can.
Yeah. Right? And you can almost hear the air conditioning running.
Oh, that was the other thing with Caruso. He was always being overdubbed. It seemed like most of his dialogue was not in the room. Yeah. It's crazy. Here's a yelling lady. It's something in Spanish. Maybe Randy can help us because he grew up in the area with a lot of Spanish-speaking individuals and does now today. So Randy, help us with this. What'd she say?
I have no idea. It sounds like such gibberish.
Is that the woman who yells?
I don't know.
You're just trying to use me?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, the last part sounds like pendejo, which is a pretty nasty thing to call somebody.
Which have been right on, so yeah.
Yeah, well, David Morris with his stinky feet. Well, let's try it. I want to hear it one more time. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, no, it's not. It's not.
Yeah,
it's
no, not. Something close to that, though. It's like a...
Something.
I put too much cornstarch in my chocolate souffle.
Ooh, never do that. Here's something about the wife. I don't know what it is.
I said I want to speak with the wife, asshole.
Asshole. Asshole.
I love it when the word with comes out like the word whis.
With your wife.
With your
I
wife.
I love whis. I kind of want to say it like that.
Yeah.
Now, why wasn't that me calling for my prom date?
Oh, this is good.
Oh, yeah.
I said I want to speak with the wife, asshole.
Oh, that would have been good. I should have thought of that. Here's a foot foot getting whacked while it's all bloody. It's, again, just a sound effect, but it's so gross. Oh, can you imagine, dude? Oh. Your torn up nasty feet getting whacked like that.
I felt that smack.
Don't like that at all. Here's the scariest line in the film. The scariest line in the entire movie. Here you go.
But you're our only chance, Janice.
Oh, don't make Janice your only chance.
You're my only hope.
Ugh. But ultimately, she's just a money dispenser. Like, she goes back wherever, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, she's now providing money, and she has nothing else to do in the movie.
Yeah, she was weird. All right.
Wasn't she supposed to be going back to talk to somebody or something? I don't know. I wouldn't watch
her husband, I think, right?
Yeah.
Because you had to get $600,000 out of him or something.
You're not going to be any help here, Janice. Why don't you just go home with your husband?
Yeah, go home, Janice.
Kind of home,
That time Russell Crowe saw me naked is this one.
That's a ridiculous figure.
It is a ridiculous figure.
Wow, well done.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I agree, by the way. So save all your emails about people thinking I'm shaming people for getting plastic surgery. I've seen myself in the mirror. I know I could use a few lifts and tucks, okay? I know. Here's a fake shooting thing. I knew Dunaway would laugh at that.
Oh, right. That. That's Kessler playing Hulk gun.
Yeah, yes. Pretending like he's playing guns. It's the worst, worst gun sound.
I love it.
It would fully work for the next Uncharted game.
So a POW camp, you always have the one guy who pretends to be crazy, but he's not.
Yeah.
Don't all the captors know that he's not actually crazy?
Well, they're dumb, though. Yeah. They're all actually dumb. Is the problem.
All right.
Fake shooting thing. No, I already did that. Sorry. Sorry. I didn't mean to do that yet. Or again. Sorry. This is the, I don't know. I wrote, yeah, I'll bet. I don't know what that is.
How's my wife? Is she okay? She misses you.
Yeah. Oh, I know why. Because you guys are just making out.
Right.
Don't act like you don't know.
She tastes good.
Yeah, she tastes great. She Meg Ryan's Australian for beer.
You would struggle to say something in that instant, I think.
Oh, you would, but that's not that's not what this movie is the problem. I agree with you. Like that's a whole other movie where you're dealing with interrelationship issues, not one where you just got rescued from a bunch of gorillas in the mist.
Right. Oh my God.
This isn't Someone to Watch Over Me where the fact that you're protecting her but you're also falling in love with her is key. It's like you go 4/5 of the movie and then, oh, you know what? I kind of like her. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to kiss her. Oh, just got her husband back in the space of, you know.
Maybe if that was earlier and there was some kind of
penance
made. I don't know. It was just weird. All right. Final clip.
Pissed blood.
All right. Thank you. that's the end of that. Let's dive into this now because it's time. The film sack checklist goes like this. Pick the wrong day to have your rabbit top down. Check. Another rabbit.
Mm-hmm. She hates convertibles.
Yeah. But you know what? A convertible in a part of town you know is the barrio and you're going to die. Don't have your top down.
Well, anyway. I don't think they would have said, well, he's got the top of his car closed. Let's move on to the next guy.
Yeah, right. Good point.
It, the old things are impenetrable.
Yeah.
We'll never get him out of there.
Movie says proof
of... Does anyone have a sharp fingernail?
Movie says proof of life a whole bunch of times out loud. Check. That happened.
Yeah,
and then,
right away. Really early on.
Yeah. Kissing the grieving wife right before the husband gets back. Check. Let's see. Let's do... Oh, Star Trek stuff. Dennis Scott, who was a stunt double for Carlos, played for Carlos. Star Trek Insurrection was a stuntman and a stuntman, as well as construction and safety in Star Trek Generations. 2009, a Star Trek stuntman also. And then there's David Oliver. He was a stand-in for Mr. Crow, played the holographic young man in the episode Cost of Living in TNG.
He's not the one that died.
No. The one that died was David Morris's stand-in double. Yeah,
stand-in.
Stunt double or something. Was he just a stand-in?
I think it was a stand-in. Wasn't he like seeing to a family member who was sick or something? How the story goes.
I thought he got hit by a Jeep or something. Is what I saw. Like,
well, yeah,
while filming, right? Oh, you mean David Morris was out visiting somebody?
David Morris was, yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant this guy died while he was out checking his friend. No, I got what you're saying now.
That's how that works.
That's always a bummer. I always hate movies where someone died on the set. That sucks.
Yeah.
It's not really worth it, in my opinion. Soundtrack grade, I'd give it
I really shouldn't have died in that movie.
I give it an F for fine. I didn't really feel like Danny Elfman did it. It was fine, but it didn't feel like Danny Elfman to me. So
I thought he was channeling Commando's music in that opening scene.
A little bit.
That flute music.
Mm-hmm.
What is that exactly? That jungle flute music
fife,
they play? Thing they do. Mm-hmm.
I could never be a person who plays a flute because you'd be known as a flautist, and I hate that term.
It's better than being known as a pianist.
Yeah, that's right? True. That's true.
Close.
A flautist and a pianist walk into a bar.
I'll take that.
I'll
take a pina colada and a flauta.
Nice. You had actual drinks in mind. That's amazing.
A flauta is not a drink.
Oh. What's a flauta? Is that
it's a little meat flute.
It's a little food. It's a food.
It's a deep fried roll.
A little meat flute.
Meat
flute.
And a corn. Yeah, meat flute.
Yeah, that was my wrestling name in high school. Is meat flute.
Meat flute. Oh, jeez.
Well done, everybody. Twitter post. This is where in up to 180 characters or less, you guys get to sum this damn movie up. Let's start with Randy.
Proof of life. David Morris gets captured and tortured. Only you won't care. Russell Crowe falls in love, only you won't care. Meg Ryan is distraught, only blah, blah, blah.
Oh, wow. See, for a guy who liked this movie, this is your thing at the end. Doesn't sound like you liked it very much. Brian Dunaway.
Proof of life, like day 44. I want my shirt. I want my spoon. Also, you do not want to go into the jungle with the Blue Man Group. Thank you very much. No.
No, you don't. That's a universal.
Those guys were
truth.
So blue. I think they were supposed to be muddy, but they liked the Blue Man Group to me.
They looked like they should have been, in the museum, like in the Hall of Concrete.
Right.
Like, that's where they could have blended in. It's like, wow, look at all these trees and those weird concrete looking people.
Yeah.
I feel like they really had their crap together when he first got kidnapped. I'm like, oh, these guys are pros. These guys are great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, now actually, that's one of my problems with the movie. I meant to say this earlier, but they want us to be empathetic to them a little bit so that we can see that they're young and inexperienced and they're sort of forced into this life and they didn't really have a choice and they're uneducated and they really don't mean that much harm. They just need to get, they got to get paid and live and survive. And this is all they know kind of thing. And then later they just come in with guns blazing and kill all of them, put a knife right in the neck of one of them. Just like that. It all seemed a little brutal to me, but
they chose sides in a war, which is, I guess, something that makes sense in the context of the film. Mm. But like I said in my opening, like, it's pretty horrible. Like, if this was an option, why didn't they just do it originally? Just go in and kill everybody.
Yeah. Plus, I don't know how he has the right to do it. Because, again, he's not really working for the company. He's not contracted currently. Like, is he just a killer then now? Like,
who do you think you are? You have no rights here.
There's no, like, war justification.
Oh, protection, sure. Right.
He's just Russell Crowe at this point.
He's Russell Crowe with a gun and I shot a few people, but I was doing it to get this guy back.
Yeah.
That's right.
He went in there with a little bit of Meg Ryan DNA though. Just a little bit. Also, what else? Oh, Brian Ibbett.
Proof of life. The story of a woman who's just not sure she wants to be in a long distance relationship.
That's pretty
love
good.
It. That's a good affirmation of that. Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, look at these right here. I have alternate titles. That's right, everybody. Alternate titles just handed to me A Beautiful Mine. You know, like one that would blow up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right? Pretty good. And then Gladinotiator.
I had a couple.
I was stretching, but good.
You're all done. Okay. Gladinotiator.
I had a couple. Oof Kissed Wife.
Okay.
And you made me come up with during this episode, you made me come up with Proof of Ripe.
Oh, ripe. It is very Proof of Ripe. well done. So there you go. Those are your alternate titles. We have emails as well. These come in to us at filmsack@gmail.com. First one from Chris with a K says, hi, guys, just finished listening to the License to Drive episode. Coming from the other side of the pond, it can be quite funny listening to the show, but this one was making me chuckle. Over here, at least in southern England, Corey is a slang name for your junk. So listening to you guys go on about, well, Corey this and well, Corey that.
And the two Corys.
He says, took a very different direction for me, especially three quarters of the way through when you started talking about girls liking on types of Corys and liking on another type of Corey. He says it's a bit childish, but I know, but just know it was making me smile. Keep up the good work, Chris. So there
one Corey is always more prominent than the other.
Yeah. You never want two Corys to get in a sword fight. You know what I mean?
Corey loves Chachi.
Jeff Litchie wrote in, says, howdy, Sackers. I just listened to the License to Drive episode. Randy identified a trope of the free-range children movie trope. Wasn't that pretty much all of the 80s in cinema for kids? The Last Dragon, The Karate Kid, Goonies, Porky's. I don't know about Porky's. They're college kids. And Porky's.
College kids. They were supposed to be there. But yeah, I get what you're going.
Oh, were they high school kids?
Too young to drink, right? Too young to drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
The youngest were because, what, did you have to be 21 at that point? So, I mean, they could still be in college, but too young to drink.
But also back then, nobody was 14, 15, 16 in these movies. They were all 28 playing 15.
Well, right.
And that always threw me for that movie. So I always thought it was college, but I guess you're right. Anyway, says, I often relate to my wife to my wife. What? I often relate to my wife that growing up in Wyoming, I had the freedom to do a lot. I could see many of these moments, minus the pithy lines in Heather Graham, happening in my hometown.
True story.
Nobody has Heather Graham in their hometown. No. Says, now can't say it would have been done sober. We might have to put somebody in a trunk to sneak into a drive-in to watch this kind of movie. Thanks, guys. Keep up sacking, Jeff. Yeah, I mean, I've often thought about this, like, I feel like growing up, I could kind of come and go and do and be wherever I wanted.
We were latchkey kids, and primarily because we were, at least our age group, our moms were going to work and no place to leave the kids after school, so good luck, kids.
And they seemed less worried about it, and we didn't have phones, so there was no excuse there. Like, we're pretty latchkey here in terms of we trust the kids to go and do and stuff, but we also have these rules like, all right, call me by 9 so I know where you're at, or be home by midnight, or, you know.
Man, you can leave school and go home and get way more trouble on the internet than we ever could, because there was no internet. If you wanted to find trouble, you had to go find it.
Yeah, you had to go find a snake, then put it in the girl's car, then shut the door. Like, there was a lot more work involved. Now you just go search for big boobs and you're done.
Big boobs.
Whatever you need to do. Whatever your thing is. Anyway, thank you, Jeff, for your email, and Chris for your email. And thank you, everyone who emails us. You can send more emails to us at filmsack@gmail.com. It's going to do it for us. Thanks. Yes.
We're going to watch another movie.
Oh, what's our next movie? I have no idea.
We're going to watch The Void. After so many people have asked us to watch The Void, we're going to watch The Void, guys. It's streaming on Netflix.
I've never even heard of The Void.
Practically new. It's only been out for like a year and a half. It's a crazy movie about something really supernatural. And
I've skimmed it. It looks pretty good. I've skimmed
all right.
it.
All
okay.
Right.
Okay. I'm in. It's from the producer, executive producer of The Witch, which scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
So I'll watch The Void. This is not to be confused with the cool VR place that's like here in Pleasant Grove, Utah, that's all the rage. Right.
Or that thing in the toilet you just laid is... Nothing to do with none of that.
No, none of that. Not my Thanksgiving void that I created
or
today.
Or the thing that made sure your pizzas were on time at Domino's.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, avoid the void.
Avoid the void.
Annoy the void. Anyway, so yeah, that looks like right up our alley. I'm stoked about that one. Come on back for that. That's The Void. Next time, right here on Film Sack, go buy your Crystal Body deodorant and be ready with the rest of us.
bring the funk, bring the noise.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's going to do it for us. Let's see what else. Filmsack.com is our website. You can go there and do stuff and be there. You can leave us voicemails or voicemails and emails at filmsack@gmail.com. And you can send us stuff on Twitter @FilmSack. We are all over the place in terms of where you can find us, iTunes, Google Play, and more. So if you have not reviewed us in those places, please do. It helps in meaningful ways. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
That's me.
We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.